Hey everyone, it's Adam Matez. And before we get to this great interview with Kristen Peek of Rivals.com, who covers recruiting for college and pro hoops, I wanted to let you know this conversation ran a little bit long, so I've spliced it into two different episodes, a part one and a part two. That way it could be two 30-minute shows instead of 1 hour long show. But the show was absolutely fantastic. One of the best episodes I think I've recorded in quite a while. Kristen has gotten to know Bol Bol very well over the years, as well as Michael Porter Jr., Jared Vanderbilt, not just gotten to know them, but their families as well. And she had so many great stories about all three players and also just sort of, you know, what Nuggets fans can expect as they get to know these guys. So this is part one. Part two will be available immediately after, so you can listen to both. But wanted to let you know they were cut as if it was one episode, so it sounds a little choppy in terms of the transitions, but it will be just two separate episodes that you'll want to listen to both parts. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy.
You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Matez.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast by the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Matez from DenverStiffs.com, the largest Denver Nuggets blog and community on the web. Check us out. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Today's episode of the show, I'm extremely excited for this one. It was an interesting week last week with the draft with the Nuggets, and quite frankly, a week that kind of caught me off guard. I did not, like much like last year with Michael Porter Jr., I did not anticipate even researching Bol Bol and learning about the chances of him falling to Denver. So it has been a nice weekend to sort of try to do some emergency research. And to continue that research, I brought on maybe the best person in the world to talk about Bol Bol and just who he is and who he can be. And it is, my guest is Kristen Peek, a contributor at Rivals.com and Yahoo Sports. Kristen, how are you doing?
I'm great. I'm so excited that Bol Bol landed on the Nuggets. Like, I'm a Colorado native, so I'm not a Nuggets fan, but I follow them. And, you know, I'm just so 2 years in a row, like, the Nuggets got the steal of the draft. So I'm so excited for Bol Bol and the Nuggets.
So you're a Colorado native. I know I actually met you through your brother, who is, you know, a listener of this show, reader of Denver Stiffs, and he introduced us at Summer League. I know he is a Nuggets fan. Are you just not a fan of any team, or do you have another NBA team?
No, that's exactly it. I mean, I don't have a team. I know so many players now. I just follow their career.
Yeah.
And so it's hard for me to just attach to a team because, I mean, it's just not fair. And I watch a lot of basketball, so I can't just hone in on one team. It's just kind of basketball in general on grassroots college and the NBA.
Yeah, you're a true journalist, so you have at least some air of objectivity, whereas me, I am a hack. No, so you actually reached out to me for this, and I'm so glad that you did, because, like you mentioned, you know Bol Bol pretty well. What was it that made you kind of want to talk about him in light of this pick?
Yeah, it was, you know, on draft night, we had a live show, and I was at the Barclays, and Bol Bol, he's very misunderstood as a player and as a person. Some of the reports coming out before the draft, I felt like were a little unfair. And I spoke to him the day before. And then on draft night, you know, I was trying to hold out as long as possible for our show to try to get him on with us so I could interview him and he could open up a little bit more. Because like you said, I've known Bol since he was 15. He's very quiet. He's very kind of closed off in a sense where he doesn't like to reveal a lot. But over the years, I've kind of started to peel the layers back, and just seeing him fall that far, it just, and then to the Nuggets, I was like, oh man, okay, Nuggets Nation, here we go. Like, I have to be able to tell you guys everything I know about this guy so you can get excited for him. Because I know once he hits the court, everyone's going to be like, what? He fell to 44? How in the world did that happen? So yeah, that's why I reached out.
Well, this is
the rest of Nuggets Nation.
This is music to Nuggets fans' ears. So we're going to get all into the scouting report and everything else. But I want to, we're going to go back, I think, a little bit to start, because just to give some perspective on for people that are listening to this that maybe haven't, you know, gotten to know you just yet. So just tell me a little bit about your job with Rivals and with Yahoo, and like, what is it exactly that you are covering, you know, in terms of like high school and NBA prospects?
Yeah. So I start out on the grassroots circuit, and you know, we have Rivals has rankings. I don't do anything with the rankings because I have favorites, and that's not fair. I can't be biased or anything. And so I shoot all of our video on Rivals.com, and then I sit down with the players and I'll interview them on what schools they like, what offers they have, what visits they're taking. And then once they hit the college scene, then it's then I'll do some stories on, you know, upcoming one and done prospects, and I'll help like Pete Thamel and Pat Forty, our main college basketball writers, throughout the season. And then once the draft comes, I'm kind of like the NBA draft analyst insider in terms of like, I do all our mock drafts and then I interview the players from the Barclays. So it's a very, it's a very rewarding job in that it's very full circle, you know, seeing these players when they're 15 and then realizing their dreams on draft night.
So that's you're fun. Following them all the way along the process, basically. Since, I mean, 15 is so young. They're, like, we talk about NBA players at 20 and just how, you know, immature, but, oh, it's understandable. 15, I mean, you're a kid.
Oh, yeah. They still have braces. They don't know. Like, Bull, when he would do interviews, it's like you'd put a microphone in his face and he'd lean back from it because it was so unnatural for him, you know?
Yeah.
And so you just try to coach them along the way. If a player on, like, if I'm sitting down with an interview, if they ever say anything that I feel like is going to hurt them in the sense of their recruitment or their fans, the fans, the college fans aren't going to like it, I cut it.
Yeah.
You know? And, so I try to, I'm like their champion, and they're, I try to make them look as good as possible.
And that's a smart thing. Like, you know, so at the NBA level, I struggle with this sometimes too. And I'm not really a guy that breaks news stories or anything like that. But, you know, sometimes you do wonder like, okay, I know what this player's trying to say, and I know they just said something that's going to come off really wrong. Like, what's my responsibility here?
Exactly.
And it's tough. But for a 15-year-old, I do feel like it is your responsibility to be like, okay, this guy was going to get killed for this thing that he doesn't necessarily mean, or even if he means it, he's 15 and he's just not ready for that level of like every word you say matters and how you phrase things matter.
They don't have media training. They don't have a PR person, you know?
I mean, they're 15.
Exactly.
It's funny with social media now, because now you could, I remember there was a big thing with Dennis Smith Jr. a couple of years back where it was like, did you see this tweet he sent in eighth grade? And it's like, come on, man, in eighth grade? Are you kidding me?
I know.
Yeah, it's a little scary. How long have you been doing this?
Just on the back, like I've been at Yahoo now for 12 years, which is crazy for me to even say. But on the basketball beat, probably, I think this is year five.
Okay.
Going into it, I think Andrew Wiggins was my first draft class.
Okay.
So I don't know. I always, he's like my benchmark. I'm like, oh, how long ago was that? So yeah, whenever that draft class was.
We have to talk about our lives in terms of draft classes. That's just the way it works. You say yes.
Yes.
And it's funny because you said, you said 5 years and I'm like, okay, I think I know this. And then when you said Andrew Wiggins, I'm like, oh yeah, I know exactly. It makes a lot of sense. Where are you typically seeing these high school players? Like, where are they? Are they all in the same tournaments at the same locations? Or are you bouncing around the country?
I'm bouncing around the country. So there's three shoe circuit, AAU circuits, right? You've got Under Armour Association, the Nike EYBL, and then the Adidas Gauntlet, right?
Okay.
So there's different the Nike EYBL has the by far the most talent. Bull started out on the Under Armour circuit and he played up three divisions at one point. He was 15 playing up against like 17-year-olds. Like, I think that was he was 15 going up against Thon Maker and Mo Bamba, Josh Jackson. So he's been competing against guys that are already in the league, you know, since he was a kid. So I don't think, anyways, we'll get into that, but I don't think his transformation will be that difficult. Everyone's wondering where his fit will be, but he can go up against. So I typically go I spend most of my time at the Nike EYBL just because that's the biggest bang for your buck.
Mm-hmm.
And you just kind of, and then there's USA Basketball. There's a lot of, there's a few high schools that are pretty big out here. We've got Sierra Canyon. When I say out here, Los Angeles, where LeBron James's son will be playing with
son.
And most likely I talked to Sharif O'Neal and he thinks that his brother will probably transfer there, so you're gonna have
Oh my god
Shaq's son Dwayne Wade's kid and LeBron's kid, and I was looking at that. And I'm like, man, that's going to be so much fun to cover.
That's like, so wild, man. That's basketball royalty.
Yeah.
There's been a couple of these, right, where there've been like former players. I wish I could remember off the top of my head.
No, it's the same. So the same school, Sierra Canyon. They just had Scottie Pippen Jr.
Yes.
And Kenyon Martin Jr. Right. So KJ Martin. So you're talking, you've got like Scottie Pippen sitting in a high school gym with Kenyon Martin, and then you got Scottie Pippen's wife, Larsa Pippen, who's best friends with the Kardashians. So it's like a regular Tuesday night high school basketball game, and Kim Kardashian and Kanye West show up. You know,
it's so
watch
wild.
High school basketball. I'm like, man, what? Only in LA. This is crazy.
I can't imagine the pressure the coach feels, because you know every school in the country, there's a parent that thinks they know better than the coach. But in this case, they probably do.
Oh, yeah. The funniest thing is I went to LeBron James' son. He was playing against this kid, Amani Bates. By the way, remember that name. He's like one of the best prospects I've ever seen. He's a class of 2022. So.
Oh, wow.
Way probably. Out. So he'll be, I think he's an incoming freshman this year. Anyway, so it was Bronny versus Amani Bates, and LeBron couldn't help himself. He was off in the corner as a parent, and then slowly he just like makes his way to the bench and coaches. It's like he just can't, it's LeBron James. He can't help himself. But Amani Bates dropped 43 points in front of LeBron James. And I'm like, as an incoming freshman, can you imagine being 14, 15 years old? Scoring 43 points
no.
for LeBron James.
I can't.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you about like future draft class, but actually this is kind of leads into it a little bit because, well, actually first I wanted to say, I don't keep up with high school basketball anymore. I don't even keep up with college, to be honest, because there's just so much with the NBA for me to have to immerse myself in that. It's like I had to sacrifice these things, even though I like them in high school. So I was, you know, a high school basketball player in Colorado, which, you know, Colorado not known for high school basketball, but we would do the tournaments every year, and it's changed a lot since, you know, 1998, 1999 when I was playing. But the big tournaments would be in like Las Vegas and California, and those were always, I would always go to those tournaments in the summer, play my game, you know, get killed, and then go to the good gyms with all the best teams and just sit and watch all day long. I used to love this stuff and watching the prospects. But the thing I wonder, I just believe in progress, like in life. And I watch some of the guys coming into the league now, and I watch some of these high school prospects, and I'm just like, my God, these guys look incredible. Do you feel like the level of competition at the high school level is improving? Do you feel like the kids are getting better at younger ages?
Yes. And I don't know what the parents are feeding them, because they seem to just be getting bigger and taller and stronger every year. It's unbelievable. I mean, I'm the same way. Like I went to Luce Palmer High School, you know, in outside Colorado Springs, and you know, like our boys team, we'd make the state championship. I'm like, man, we're so good. We're so good. And now that I'm covering like the actual really, really good players, I'm like, we were trash.
Yeah. Right. No doubt about
nothing,
it.
For sure. But yeah, I mean, year after year, I walk in the gym. It's like, oh, what grade is that kid? I even did it with Bull. I walked in the gym. I can tell you the first time I saw him play, and I said, oh my gosh, who is that kid? He's so tall. They're like, that's Manute Bull's son. I said, what? It's like, yeah, his name's Bull Bull. I was like, Bull Bull. Are you kidding me? That's his name?
It's the best name ever.
Like, the best name ever. Yeah. But yeah, he's like 14, 15 years old, and just. Like very raw, but you could see the potential.
Like 6'10" or something at that age.
So yeah,
I can't. Yeah. I can't imagine my old eighth grade teams going up against somebody like, you know, like that. So it is kind of funny.
I know if you ever watch Zion Williamson high school highlights, like he stayed at his small private, you know, high school.
Yeah,
and he was just killing a bunch of like these white kids. You know?
These tiny little guys.
Like, I know they're probably just praying that they don't break a bone playing against him, for sure.
So before we go to break, one of my favorite anecdotes about Bol Bol is that in Serbian, his bol means pain, so his name is Pain Pain. I don't know why I find that so funny.
Oh, that is funny.
Yeah. So
did you find that fun fact?
Well, we have so many Serbian followers that I had a half dozen people send that to me, but they're like, bol, yeah, B-O-L in Serbian, that's pain. So I was like, oh man. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, who knows what that means? But we'll cut to break. When we come back, we're going to get into Bol Bol, and as she kind of alluded to, Kristen sees him to be misunderstood. But to be misunderstood, there has to be some bad things coming out, and that's what we're going to kind of talk about. So we'll take a break, and we'll be right back. Today's episode of the show is brought to you by Hotels.com. Don't hate like your friend's trip on Facebook or Instagram. Get your own trip. Get rewarded basically anywhere. Hotels.com. Be there. Do that. Get rewarded. Also brought to you by Untuckit. Great place for a gift for the man in your life. Shirts that are specifically designed to look great untucked and feel comfortable at work or on the weekend. No tucking or tailoring required. Go to Untuckit.com and use promo code MBA to get 20% off. Okay, back here on the show with Kristen Peek, a contributor at Rivals.com and Yahoo Sports. And you talked about it already, but you first met Bol when he was 15 years old. So you've kind of, it's been several years now that you've sort of been around him. When did you first see him play, and what was the event?
He was playing on the Under Armour circuit.
Okay.
So, and he was playing up two divisions, and it was at one of their stops. There's like three sessions and then the finals, and it was at session two, I think, in outside New York City, and just this kind of packed gym, you know, with four courts, four games going on. And just like I said, I saw him. I was watching, I think, Markelle Fultz play, and I just looked across the gym, and I'm standing with my coworker. I said, "Who is that?" You know,
he stands out. Someone,
100%. And so he said, "Bol Bol," and you know, from then on, it was like I saw him at a Under Armour All-American camp where he went head-to-head with Thon Maker and Mo Bamba, and DeAndre Ayton was there. And he's still, again, like 15. And I remember I was filming on the baseline, and Trayvon Duval, who was a point guard at Duke, is coming down on a fast break. Bol's running with him, and he throws it up for an alley-oop. And instead of dunking it, Bol catches it and then just lays it in. And Trayvon Duval grabs him. He's like, "Bol, what are you doing? Why didn't you dunk that?" You know, he's like, "Why didn't you dunk that shit?" And Bol's like, "I didn't know you were throwing up." And he's like, "You're 7 feet tall. And you're throwing up at the rim every time." And Bol's just like, "Okay."
You probably have to learn how to be 7 feet tall. I mean, especially at that age, he probably hadn't been that tall for too long. So he's still learning how to use that.
Yeah. Yeah. And a funny thing is he used to tell me, because I said, like, "Bol, when you're flying, like, do people just ask you constantly, 'Oh, are you a basketball player?'" You know, he's like, "Oh yeah, I get it all the time." He said, "I like to tell them that I play golf." And I'm like, "Oh, I love that so much."
That's pretty funny. So tell me about him as a 15-year-old. Like, so the first times you're seeing him, is he pretty raw? Like, what is his skill set, you know, out a perimeter oriented? What was he like?
No, he was played inside. He had a pretty good timing with shot blocking. And I asked him, I said, you know, "Do you make this a priority?" I remember asking him as like a 15, 16-year-old, I said, "Do you make that a priority?" And he said, "Well, yeah, I used to watch highlights of my dad." And since I'm his son, you know, I want to make sure that I honor him in that way. And I hone in on that skill.
That's really cool.
He was a pretty good shot blocker around that age. He didn't really have a perimeter game yet, and I think he started to develop that as he stopped putting on weight. And he figured, "Well, I'm not going to be a big, I'm 7 feet tall, but I have to have a 3-point shot." And so it was around his I want to say his junior year when he started playing with Shaq's son Shareef O'Neal that he started to develop his outside shot.
So his game evolved over high school quite a bit, then, it sounds like.
Yeah, he started out, you know, as like a top 20 player, and then at the height of his career, his senior year, you know, we had him as high as 3. I think he finished up as 4, but there was this he played at the Hoopall Classic, which is a really big high school basketball tournament, and he crushed it. He killed it. And at the point, like, the two guys that do the rankings for Rivals.com, Eric Bossy and Corey Evans, they're like, "We are thinking about putting Bol as the number one player in the class."
Oh,
and
that was over
Zion Williamson. That was over RJ Barrett. You know, he was that good at that event.
Who was the other one? If you said he finished 4, like, so I'm guessing RJ and Zion were 1-2 in some order. Do you remember off the top of your head?
No, not off the top of my head, but I'm going to look it up right now.
I'm just curious because I can't – I know it wasn't Ja Morant, and so I'm trying to think of, like, who else it could have been at that age.
It was – oh, you know who it was. It was Nasir Little.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. So it didn't change that much then. I mean, all of those guys still, you know, still big-time prospects.
Yeah.
It's always interesting to kind of go back and see how those change over time, but okay, so how many times would you say you have seen him play, I guess, it like live and in person over the years?
Gosh, 20 to 30 times.
Oh,
and
wow.
That's being conservative, yeah.
Wow. And you mentioned some of the big ones. So you were pretty high on him, it sounds like, and you liked where he was. Tell me about Oregon as a basketball program. Like, what do you know about them, the type of players they bring in, and just the style of play that they have?
Yeah, so with recruiting, a lot of it has to do, again, I mean, anyone just has to, like, look at the FBI investigation and what's going on.
But right.
with shoe companies and whether a school is a Nike school or an Adidas school or an Under Armour school. So Bol finished his AAU career with this team called Cal Supreme, which is a Nike. They played on the Nike EYBL.
Okay.
So his final schools were Kentucky, Arizona, and Oregon. And then UCLA was in there just because Sharif O'Neal, his best friend, was going there. He was committed there. So they were kind of hanging on. And then Kansas, like, was in at five, but didn't really stand a chance. So really what it comes down to is just like what Dana Altman, the way he pitched it to Bol was like, you are Chris Boucher. We're going to give you the freedom to run the floor. There's going to be a lot of versatility in the offense. You can step out behind the three and knock that down. We're not going to make you play a traditional four or five. And we're going to run the floor. And that really appealed. Like, when you have a player that you can show a recruit, no, this is who you're going to be in our offense. And mm-hmm. we made the final four with Chris Boucher. You know, that's a really good recruiting tool. Kentucky didn't have that. I mean, I guess Kentucky had that a little bit with Skal Avassiere, but it didn't really pan out well for him.
Right.
So it was just that, and the fact that it was a Nike school and the campus is really, really cool. And it was on the West Coast, so his mom could get up there because she, I think she was at that time living in Kansas City. So it was an easy flight for her.
Oh, okay. So when you say this a Nike school, you're talking about like a lot of these AAU teams, you know, they're sponsored a lot by these different shoe companies, and that often helps funnel them to Nike schools. Is that correct, or am I missing something?
Yes. No, that is correct. So when Zion Williamson is elected to go to, he was an Adidas kid through and through for years and years.
Uh-huh.
And so when he elected to go to Duke, which is a Nike school, instead of Kansas, which is where people thought he was going to go, or Clemson because his stepdad played there, it was pretty shocking.
Okay, I got you. And it's not like, I mean, obviously the kids have freedom. If they didn't, it would be, that would be a real racket, not even just a shadow racket. But it still seems like it works more often than not to kind of get the kids where they're supposed to go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so tell me real quick, draft night, did you think going into that night that there was that he was going to drop at all, or in the second part, as far as he did?
No, I thought he was going to go. I thought the Celtics were going to pick him up at 20 or 22.
Okay.
But
that's still falling because he was like a week prior, he was still a lottery guy.
Yeah. I think a lot of teams got their hands on his full, medical report with his foot. And the fact that he had lost about 15 pounds from his college season to now. And so, the reason why I think he's so misunderstood is because of all the bad talk around him pre-draft was, oh, he surrounded himself with bad people. All he wants to do is hang out with rappers. He's not really committed to the game. And when I talked to him the day before the draft, and I just said, I was like, hey, how you feeling? Like, what's this process been like? I know you're getting a lot of bad rap. And he just said to me, he's like, you know what? Getting hurt after those 9 games was the best thing that ever happened to me, because having to sit there and watch people play basketball, it made me realize how much I love the game.
Yeah.
And it made me want to work just as hard. Mm. And he said, but when you're coming off an injury, you can't let your game speak for itself. So it was really frustrating for me to have to sit with teams and try to tell them that, when all the research and all the background they've done had contradicted what he was saying, and that, No, I really want to play. I really want to play.
Right.
And everything said, oh, he just wants to, you know, be famous.
Well, so about that part, that aspect of it, because I've seen that he has a bunch of very famous friends and has, you know, done pickup games with, like you mentioned, some rappers and stuff. So is that part of, you know, the reputation with him, that he has been sort of he's kind of embraced the celebrity aspect of this all, maybe too much? Is that at least something you've heard?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Like, when you're best friends with Shaquille O'Neal's son.
Yeah.
And they have endless amount of money, endless amount of resources, and Bull was just eating it up. Like, he was best friends with Migos and Quavo, and it was this big thing when Quavo tried to sign him as an athlete, or he like, created his own agency, and he just thought Bull was going to be his first guy, and Bull's like, no. Like, he finally, you know, wised up, so... between that and then the fact that he switched high schools 3 or 4 times,
right.
That's kind of a red flag to teams, mm-hmm. just showing that you're not committed to things. So it was one of those things where you're watching the train wreck happen,
mm-hmm.
and you know it's not the player's fault,
mm-hmm.
and you just hope that they come out on top at the end and find their way. And honestly, the day before the draft, when he said, you know, breaking my foot was the best thing that ever happened to me. It made me really miss the game.
Yeah.
I was like, finally, he gets it. Mm. It's too little too late, but finally he's there, and he'll be able to hopefully climb back up and have a great career in the NBA.
So another sort of thing I've heard, and again, I always go into players. This was a big thing with Michael Porter Jr. I always try to go into players with a clean slate. Like, they have reputations. But me, I'm not a famous person, but I have like a small online presence now, and I've heard so many crazy things about myself. So I kind of know firsthand that, you know, you have to give everybody a chance. You get to know them. You try to observe and figure these people out for themselves. So I say all this as in I've never met the guy. I've talked to him on the phone now one time, and I have really no preconceived notions of him. But there are reputations out there of what other people have said, and other people, you know, have texted me, oh, this is what I've heard. So I'm going to throw these out there, but I want to make it clear that these are not my opinions. These are just things I've heard, and we'll just kind of talk about, you know, what we make of him. But another one of the knocks on him has been that he is soft, both like the way he plays, which makes sense. I mean, he weighs nothing, and you're going to have to be a finesse player. You can't be a power player. But also just sort of soft mentally. What is your take on sort of that criticism?
I don't think he's a soft player. I could send you some highlights from high school where he like posterized some kids.
Really?
And it does not look like he's a soft player. But I get that. Because he's similar. You know who else has that rep is Romeo Langford, who is very quiet demeanor. He went to Indiana. I think I can't remember where he went. There's so many trades, but he got drafted in the first round. But just quiet demeanor, just very reserved. So I get that soft comparison. I don't think he's a soft player. I do think in high school, he definitely was soft mentally, in that he did take some games off, you know, in terms of, oh, well, I'm Bol Bol.
Yeah.
Like, this comes so easy to me. But that's not going to happen in the NBA. So
yeah.
I think...
A lot of bigs are that way because they were so much bigger than 90, you know, 9 out of 10 games they walk into is just so physically dominant they didn't need an A game.
Right, exactly. Mm. But I don't know.
The demeanor part's interesting because I think another thing, like these, some buzzwords really I dislike, and soft is one of them. You mentioned an interesting thing about demeanor is I think a lot of people associate like personality traits with like character flaws. And so if a person is a quiet person, just like reserved person, then they can get those types of labels as soft because they're not, you know, screaming after they dunk and or this or that, which is like those things actually don't matter. They're just personality traits.
Right. Exactly. And I mean, everyone just jumps to conclusions way too early. Like they see a kid play one time and they're like, oh, he's soft.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Right.
You watch Bull play 9 games in college and you think you're an expert.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
This is why I don't like to get into the draft, because I like to talk about things I feel confident about. And there's no way I could watch enough college to really know this draft, you know, draft guys well enough. Okay. I heard another one. This is an interesting one. I've heard that he's weird.
No, he's a kid. I don't think he's weird. I think he's uncomfortable with the media.
Yeah.
And that comes across as being a weird kid.
Mm.
I don't think he's weird. Like, if you're weird, you're kind of a loner and you don't have friends. Like, he's very sociable.
Okay.
He just comes off from the media as being like a quiet, like, even, oh my gosh, listen to this. So the media availability the day before the draft, you want to know the first question that somebody asked him? This is insane. Hey, Bull, how's it feel going through this process and, you know, being drafted tomorrow on the anniversary of your dad's death?
Oh, geez.
That was one of
yeah.
the first questions.
Yeah.
And he just looked at the guy like, I don't really feel like talking about that. And so
that was the theme of the draft this year. Everybody just kept asking about like dead relatives. Instead, it felt like every person coming up, and it's like, man, really? This is where we're going to go right now?
I know. Kevin Porter, same thing. Oh, yeah. Your dad was murdered when you were 4. That's why you wear the number. How's it going to feel going through draft night? What?
I really strongly dislike those types of things, but they are so prevalent. And then that night, on this year's draft night, I thought it was the worst I'd ever seen of those kinds of things. So my next one was that he's hard to read. And I guess this kind of all plays into the picture you're sort of painting of him, of one, that he's a kid, but two, that he's just, people project things onto people when they don't fit the mold, maybe.
Yeah, I think he's hard to read for sure. Cause he doesn't have a lot of emotion. Like, if you saw it when he got drafted, he's just kind of like, oh, okay, you know, and probably inside he's like, this sucks. I'm about to like lose my mind. And he just is kind of like, oh, I'm just going to prove everyone wrong.
Right.
You know, and just very quiet. And that's how he's always been. Like, every time I see him, it's like, I'm always like upbeat. Hey, Bull, how's it going? He's just like, hey, KP, good.
Yeah.
It's like, you ready to play? Yeah. Like, it's very one level. So, yeah, I get that. I think he's hard to read.
Yeah. I think Jokic, one of the things I like about him is I think he has sort of embraced – I think he hates the media as well as every NBA player hates the media. And I think he hates American celebrity. Just the idea of like, he's this guy that everybody wants to take pictures while he's sitting there doing nothing. And I think with him, he's kind of embraced so many players. They answer the way they feel they're supposed to, right? Like, oh, Mamba mentality. You have to have that. So when somebody asked me like, were you nervous in the fourth? No, I wasn't nervous. You know what? Like, they put on this front. Or, I know Jamal Murray does the one about injuries a lot, like, are you injured? He'll never admit it. And you're like, yeah, we're not saying you're using it as an excuse, or, you know, or whatever. And I wonder, what I like about Jokic is you ask him a lot of those types of questions and he'll give the funniest answer, like, oh, I was so nervous. And it's like, he's not afraid to be that. I wonder if Bull, you know, that's maybe a lesson he could even learn from him. Is just like, look, man, these guys are going to write the story they want to write no matter what. So you might as well just be 100 with them. And
I don't see that. I don't see that happening with Bull. I feel like you're going to get about 4-word answers from him.
Gotcha.
In any press conference.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you bring me on as a contributor, I could probably get a little bit more.
I don't think our budget can rival Yahoo's, unfortunately. I think I have some Chipotle gift cards I could throw your way. Which, hey. So then I've also heard, obviously, this one I think you're going to refute, but I had somebody text me outright as soon as the draft, oh, I've heard that he's an awful human being at this point in his life or something like that. And
what?
And look, when I get texts like that, I just, you know, I just throw them out. But it sounds like this is, again, part of that machine that – maybe somebody had one interaction or heard of somebody else who had one interaction and then drew a whole sort of story about him.
See, I don't even know how that would happen, because even as like if a fan, like young kids, they'd come up to Bull and Sharif O'Neal again, cause they were attached at the hip when they played together on AAU. And then also in high school, when they came up to him, they were always accommodating. Hey, can we get a picture?
Yeah.
Hey, Bull, can you sign this? Like, I've never seen him, you know, kind of push away fans or kids, and he's always been very accommodating. He's not like outright happy about it, but
yeah,
he'll just stand there. I mean, maybe it's again, his demeanor, he's just kind of like, all right, take the picture. You know, he's not going to smile and be excited about it. But
he's got a bit of an Eeyore presence to him.
Yes, 100%.
He's not like, he doesn't seem like a smiley kind of guy or anything, which is fine. I mean, that's how people are.
I want fans to know that if they run into Bull, you know, in the streets in Denver somewhere, like, he'll probably have his hood up because he's already 7 feet tall, so he doesn't like to be stand out. But he is approachable. Like, you can talk to him for sure.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to be a long-winded conversation, but you can get a picture and he'll stop and say, you know, what up. Yeah. You'll get 5 words from him, so.
That's it for part one, but you're going to want to check out part two, which should be available right now to you, where Kristen talks a lot about what the Nuggets can do to get the most out of Bol Bol. And she also talks about Michael Porter Jr., Jared Vanderbilt, and the incoming classes of 2020, 21, and 22, some of the classes that she thinks will be the best that she has covered in her 12-year career. Lots of great stuff in there that you're going to enjoy. And so we'll see you again on the other side.
Thank you for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.